Hour number two, Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase McCabe and Derek Mason. Chase and Mace here with you live at Pete and Terry's Tavern, Bridgestone Arena, Predators and Devils later on tonight. Appreciate David Poyle and Greg Wyshynski for joining me in the first hour. Nick Kieser, the reporter on the ones and twos, back at the studio. D-Mace, what's up, my friend?
Nothing much, man. Same old, you know.
Yeah,
need to get rid of this cold weather.
I know you're sick of the cold already, but yeah. So you're gonna finish the show with me, and then I'm gonna start my old show with you.
Exactly.
So the band is back together. Maybe we'll have a little Chase, Willie, and D-Mace coming up. But Caroline off today, Michelle off today. So you know we're just combining efforts, and that's.
Hey, did
okay.
The two ladies plan us out together? I think they did. I think
probably. They
did, conspiring against us.
I mean, look.
Like, listen, y'all guys handle this. We'll go out.
Y'all do this on
exactly.
Your own. You're fine. So a little bit of news out of the NFL, as the New York Jets have named a new offensive coordinator, and it's Nathaniel Hackett. The couldn't even last a year with the Denver Broncos as their head coach. Of course, former offensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. And also a part of that is they have hired former Titans offensive line coach Keith Carter to be their O-line coach and run game coordinator. That's according to Adam Schefter. Couple of interesting things there, but if you start connecting dots, Nathaniel Hackett, of course, where was he before Denver?
I think Green Bay.
Yeah, Green Bay.
Yeah.
So it just is becoming a little more obvious that maybe Aaron Rodgers ends up as a member of the New York Jets?
It's becoming more – the picture's becoming a little bit more clear. It's becoming more apparent that at least they're going to try to make a push, and it's going to be a strong push to get Aaron Rodgers because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a few first-rounders and possibly some other picks and maybe even your quarterback. You know, so we'll see. This Jet team, really good defense, young defense, aggressive. Offense, they got some playmakers. They're just missing that consistent quarterback. You know, if they do indeed get an Aaron Rodgers, that, you know, bolts them up, you know, even further and, you know, in regards to teams that are capable of winning a championship. And it brings me all the way back to the Tennessee Titans, because where are the Jets in the AFC?
Yep.
So that puts you even further down. That's why I've said, and I'm going to continue to say it, get your quarterback somehow, some way.
But you've also you've said you could keep Tannehill, but you still have to have the future.
Yeah, you have to, because I think what people are missing here is the Titans might not be in this situation again next year. They might. I would assume they will be a little bit better than what they were last year, maybe a game better than what they were last year, assuming they stay healthy. So if they're going to be a game better, then that's going to push them further down if the trend continues to go the way the trend has been going in the NFL as far as win losses, where you sit in a draft. They will move down further in the draft and may not be able to get their quarterbacks. I don't know how many quarterbacks in next year's class are projected.
Next year's class, I think, is going to be better than this year's class.
I know one, the kid Caleb out of USC,
Caleb Williams, then
North Carolina's quarterback.
Drake May.
So you got two.
Shakur Sanders probably is in that class.
Yeah, so that's three. But are you going to be high enough to get those guys?
Yeah.
You know?
Look, it's a fair question. But the issue that I think that they're faced with is – They got to fix this offensive line.
Yeah, of course.
And they need to get another playmaker on offense too. And so what is your priority list? If you know you have a quarterback in Tannehill that is good, not great, but good, then do you ride that and address more of your pressing needs to fill those holes in this year's draft and free agency? And look, we're just getting started.
Exactly.
There's going to be a lot of dominoes to fall in all of this, you know, jockeying for draft spots, you know, in the top 10. We got to get through the combine. You know, there's always, you know, surprises that come out with combine and Senior Bowl and pro days and all of that that could change this. And Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel might decide, hey, you know what? Will Levis has fallen to us at 11. We love this kid. We got to take him, and then they do it. But mm-hmm. you never know. I mean, I think they gotta figure the offensive line part out, because the other part of this, Keith Carter being named the O-line coach with the Jets, I didn't think he was a bad coach necessarily. I thought he was, you know, not great necessarily, mm-hmm. but I don't think – I could have made the argument if they didn't have so many injuries on the offensive line that he probably would have kept his job.
Well, I mean, if you – and I forget, and I can't quite remember where he said it, Vrabel, in his press conference, but he made it seem like everybody wasn't on board with you know, whether it be the offensive coordinator or whatnot. There might have been some friction in there. Because you can't sit back, and this is what you know. It's hard for me to sort of wrap my arms around, because Jared asked the question. Well, you fire Downey, you fire at your offensive line coach, you fire your defensive back coach, but you don't fire your special teams coach.
Yeah.
And then and Vrabel gave his reasons why.
Sure.
But why didn't those reasons apply to the offensive line coach as well?
Yeah.
Because you gave the reasons. You know how many guys we had? You know, guys were going down and this and that. And you're absolutely right, Vrabel. You hit it spot on. But why didn't you apply that to your offensive line coach as well?
Well, and I think part of it is – because he mentioned this too, the offensive line. He wants the offensive line coach connected more to the offensive coordinator,
and I don't think they were connected.
And so he's going to bring in an offensive coordinator. Then the offensive coordinator is going to help find the O-line coach
uh-huh.
that is more on, you know, on the same wavelength as he is. Which I mean, I get that you want your offensive staff mm-hmm. to all be on the same page.
But I want them to be great teachers as well. Don't just hire an offensive line coach because he agrees with everything I say.
Yeah,
and you got to be a great teacher as well.
That's where I think Carter wasn't that great, because uh-huh. I don't know. You know, you've talked about this organization developing quarterbacks. Munch developed offensive line.
Yeah,
you know, and I didn't think Bruce was all that great at it when mm-hmm. you know, when Munch was the head coach. But you know, Munch developed offensive linemen. They had what's his name from the Redskins that was in here?
Not Kevin Mawai, but I know you don't.
Yeah, he was a
guard in this league.
He was the offensive line yeah. coach. It'll hit me in a second, but I thought he did wonders for Lawan.
Yes,
you know, he was developing Taylor Lawan. You weren't seeing that as much, and I think that's what you need now. You need a guy that's going to develop Nicholas Petit-Frere. That's mm-hmm. going to develop, you know, whoever you draft, maybe he can develop and get more out of Dylan Raidens. You
yeah.
know, you don't know. I mean, they may decide just to give up on him and move on, or, hey, let's bring in another voice and see if we can develop him. But that's what I think they're looking for there, because that's the key that you have pointed out quite a bit, is just developing these younger players. And I think to apply that to Anthony Midgett, the former defensive back coach, that was kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, you have to get someone in because my thing is, if you've you know, released or fired the offensive coordinator, offensive line
Russ
coach.
Russ Grimm, that's who.
Yeah, Russ Grimm.
Thank you.
Offensive line coach. You chose to keep the quarterback's coach, but there hasn't been, at least, you know, from the outside looking in, there hasn't been much development in regards to quarterbacks. Well, you could say, well, look at Ryan Tannehill. Well, Ryan Tannehill was pretty much – he spent eight years in Miami. And Ryan wasn't a bad quarterback. Ryan was a good quarterback in Miami. And he came here, and he was the same player but was surrounded by a little bit better talent. And Arthur Smith knew exactly what his strength and his weaknesses were, and he operated as such. So I'm not going to sit here and say, you know – that, you know, O'Hara developed Ryan Tannehill. He may have helped in some instances. But Ryan Tannehill, when you're an 8-year vet, 9-year vet, I mean, you should be developed as a player.
Yeah.
Now, you're going to continue to learn as you move on with new systems and how to make yourself better. But as a player, you're developed, you know, by year 4 or 5. We know if you can play or if you can't play, you know, really by year 3.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to give O'Hara the credit to say, well, he developed Ryan Tannehill. No, I'm not going to give him that credit. He possibly – there was some help in there, yes. But I'm looking at Woodside. I'm looking at Willis. I'm looking at the other quarterbacks that they drafted in later rounds. Whether O'Hara was a part of that or not, the guys I know he was a part of, Woodside and Willis – you cut Woodside or you put him to the practice squad in place of Willis. Willis is not developed as a quarterback. We saw it, and maybe it was just too soon for him, you know?
Yeah.
But that tells me that the development of Woodside wasn't at the place that you felt you could keep him as a backup, that you chose to put him on practice squad. Essentially, you should have just cut him because once you put him on a practice squad, he's fair game anyway, you know?
Right.
So to me, you haven't shown at this point that you are capable or you've done a good – not capable, but you've done a good job at developing quarterbacks.
The Patriots have made it official and announced Bill O'Brien as their offensive coordinator, which will be interesting. Maybe Brady just goes back and they'll put the band back together.
If that happens, boy, oh, boy. I wouldn't put it past Belichick.
On NFL.com – they had like potential landing spots for Brady, and the Patriots were listed as a team, but I don't see it. I want to see what Bill O'Brien can do with Mac Jones, who I think they passed each other in the hallway at Alabama. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but again, even with Mac Jones, and this is what I talk about, the development of players, and Vrabel even spoke on it. I mean, I wrote it down, and his three essential keys in you know, developing players or how they look at players as a coaching staff and what they're tasked to do. I got it in my folder somewhere, so I'll bring it up later. But he hasn't done a good job, not Vrabel, but Pat O'Hara, of developing. Because I look at whether it's Mac Jones, whether it's Brock Purdy, whether, you know, it's Garner Mitchell when he first started playing, you saw the development in those quarterbacks as they started to get better. You saw it like week from week.
Yeah.
You didn't see that from Malik Willis. You didn't see it from Woodside. So there is a disconnect between your teaching and them you teaching them and them receiving it. Something's missing in the middle where they're not getting it the way they should.
Coming up next, we're going to do a deep dive into championship weekend and the final four opponents in the NFL, what Derek likes and what he doesn't like about each team. Also, Predators, just putting this out there, defenseman Alex Carrier will miss the next 4 to 6 weeks with an upper body injury. They have recalled defenseman Kevin Gravel from the Milwaukee Admirals. So tough loss for the Preds, losing Carrier for the next month or so, but hope he has a speedy recovery. More on championship weekend. Coming up next, it's Chase and Michelle. D Mace in for Michelle here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, presented by Hair Club. Love your hair, live your life, creating custom hair loss solutions for men and women. Chase McCabe and Derek Mason live at Pete Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Nick Keyser doing some reporting behind the glass back at the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Electrical Studios. D-Mace, just seen this on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of coaching news coming out. Dallas Cowboys head coach Mike McCarthy announced today that the team has not renewed the contracts for the following coaches: Rob Davis, assistant head coach; George Edwards, senior defensive assistant; Leon Lett, assistant defensive line; Skip Pete, running backs coach; Joe Feldman, offensive line; and Kyle Valero, quality control analytics. This is what we call you make changes or you get changed.
Exactly, basically.
That is what that means.
Either you make some changes or we're going to make some changes. And you're not going to like our changes.
Yep, and he turns around, he walks in and goes, guys, love you, but see ya.
But cover your own bottle.
CYA. That's what it means. We like to call that. I think we're going to see several dominoes fall in the coaching ranks in the NFL. I mean, we've already seen some coordinator hirings. Sean Payton, is he going to end up in – I think he's going to end up in Denver, I think.
I don't know. I mean, there could be some openings potentially happening.
But this just coming out that nobody has scheduled second interviews with him. So
I think he's waiting on, because he can. He's a Super Bowl winning coach, coach of the year. He has skins on the wall. So he can sit around and wait on the job he wants, because there are going to be teams, regardless, that are going to be looking for his services. And he may wait another year, because – if Dallas don't get this right next season, McCarthy's gone. He's gone. And I'm pretty sure that's what Sean Payton is waiting on.
Well, and the other thing, too, is if he's still under contract with the Saints. So if he's hired right now, I think they got to give up a first-round pick, whoever hires him.
Mm.
So, I mean, and it may not be this year's, but they got to give one up at some point. And so that's probably what's holding some teams back.
Yeah.
Dan Quinn's going to get one of these jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be looking. Dallas,
if there
are
five head coaching jobs vacant?
Yeah. I think D'Amico Ryans ends up in Houston.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
He played there.
Yep.
Spent majority of his career there. He was drafted by Houston, right? I think he was drafted by Houston.
I think you might be right.
I think I played 3 months with him when he was in Houston before I retired. So that would be, that it would make sense because, I mean, he's one of the hottest names out there. What he's been able to do with that San Francisco defense, man, it's been lights out. So
yeah, and I saw a report earlier that all signs – Irsay seems to love Jeff Saturday and he's going to let him pick his own staff and – kind of feels like the Colts may stick with Jeff Saturday.
I think they can because they're in a position to get a quarterback. If they were not in a position to get the quarterback, I don't know if that would be the necessary right hire. But, because if you can't get your quarterback, as soon as you walk in that door, your time is clicking,
Well,
you're on the clock.
I know we're going to – I promise I'm going to get to the championship weekend, but – I would say this too, Derek. If Jeff Saturday stays the head coach, don't rule them out in the Rodgers sweepstakes, because Jeff Saturday did end his career in Green Bay.
Yes.
And so he is familiar with Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is familiar with him. I think that is a dot you can connect. And maybe that's why Irsay's doing it. Maybe Irsay views it as, well, hey, Rodgers and Jeff get along. Maybe we can make that happen. So because even though this is going to have to be a trade situation, Rodgers is going to have some say in where he goes.
Yeah. And the team's got to be willing. Would Indianapolis be willing to give up what it's going to take to get a Aaron Rodgers? I'm not sure they are, because they got, just like the Titans, not only do they have to fill their quarterback vacancy, which the Titans don't necessarily have to fill, but they do have to get a quarterback for the future. The Indianapolis Colts, they got to get more pass catchers. They got to get some more, guys on defense. More importantly, the guys on the outside, cornerbacks, defensive backs. And then they too got to possibly solidify their line just a little bit more. They spent a lot of money on that offensive line, and they still didn't play to the level that you believe they should have.
Okay, so let's transition into the championship weekend, starting with the NFC. The Eagles, the number one seed, Jalen Hurts, I think is going to be the MVP of the league. What do you like about Philadelphia?
Everything. There's nothing I don't like.
Really?
I think Philadelphia is the most dangerous team in the playoffs. They were the most dangerous team in the NFL throughout the season as the season went on. They were the most dangerous team once the playoffs started. And now that it's down to the Final Four, they are still the most dangerous and best team and most complete team from top to bottom. If you're talking about 11 starters on offense, 11 starters on defense, they don't have a weakness on offense. They don't have none. They got the best offensive line in the National Football League. They got a 1,200-yard rusher. They got a quarterback that is playing basically flawless right now. He's playing at MVP level. They got two wideouts that are playing at Pro Bowl levels or all pro levels. They got a tight end and is damn good. There's no weakness. They got a head coach that is just energetic. And he knows the pulse of that team, and that team, you know, seems like they will run through a wall for him. There's no weaknesses on offense. Defensively, they get turnovers. They rush the passer. They're physical. They're fast. There's the only way I see Philadelphia losing is if they beat themselves.
Yeah.
San Fran's a good team, but San Fran is not on the same – they're not in the same bracket as the Philadelphia Eagles. They're just not. Philly's the best team in the NFL this year.
I think the only thing that would concern me, and yes, I know that Jalen Hurts played at Alabama. He played in big moments, you know, in his collegiate career. But you see guys sometimes when they get in that big moment, especially going up against a really good defense in San Francisco, that they have to go through the moment to learn how to get through the moment. Mm-hmm. And I just worry if it's going to be a little too big for him at this point in his career. But I, for the most part, agree with you. I mean, that's a close to flawless team that they have. And I like the attitude of the head coach. Nick Sirianni is just a no BS. Like, he's going to tell it like it is. And I like that about him.
Yeah, he's a guy that knows the pulse of his team, knows how to motivate his team. But this is a bunch of guys that they're out to prove a point. They're out, and I think it starts with Jalen Hurts. He's out to prove that. And the good thing about him is that he has some playoff experience. Even though last year didn't go the way they wanted it to go in the playoff, they end up getting beat down. It wasn't even a contest between them, and they played Tampa that last year, right? It wasn't even really a contest. Tampa was the better team. But that experience of playing in the playoffs helped him. So I think he has more than anybody. I think he has a huge chip on his shoulder. And the reason why I believe he won't succumb to the pressure is because he knows he doesn't have to win this game by himself.
Sure.
If they stop the Philadelphia Eagle from running the ball, again, he has two all-pro receivers that he can just toss the ball to. Man, they got a third receiver. I forgot the third receiver's name. But they have a tight end in Goddard. And if they want to stop the pass, well, we got three people that are capable of running the ball. Sanders, the backup running back, and the quarterback.
Right.
So you got to count. You haven't played a team like this. You got to play this game 52 yards wide and 100 yards, 120 yards long, meaning the back of both back of both end zones. They haven't had to play a team like that.
Yeah.
You know, so they got to guard every inch of this football field.
Yes, absolutely. Coming up next, we will talk a little bit more about their opponent and also the AFC as well. I forgot the name of the show for a second. Chase and Michelle. I'm all confused today. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Back here, Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Derek Mason hanging out with you today. I'll be sticking around for Caroline Willie and D-Mace for a little bit. Is Caroline out today and tomorrow, as is Michelle. But talking about the championship weekend, you touched on them a little bit, but San Francisco, the things that they would need to do defensively, even though that is a very good defense. I mean, you saw two defensive juggernauts last week in San Francisco and Dallas, a low-scoring game, and it came down to the wire. And ultimately, it was Dak Prescott that lost the game for the Cowboys. couldn't win it for the Cowboys, I should say. But I'm still not bitter. But
just a little bit.
San Francisco is interesting because I think we're all sitting here waiting for Brock Purdy to realize that he's Mr. Irrelevant, and he just hadn't done it yet. And I was having a conversation with Teron Davenport yesterday, and he made a very good point, and I think I've heard you make this as well, is he hasn't had to put the team on his shoulders and go make all these tremendous plays and win games. He's run the playbook that Kyle Shanahan has given him. He hasn't made the mistakes, so therefore he hasn't lost the games for them. He's done his job, and that's okay.
He's supposed to do.
Right. I don't mean that as a knock. I think he's done a really, really good job. You know, everybody wants to make these comparisons. Oh, is he like Brady? You know, Brady did that in 01. You know, Brady didn't win those games.
Nope.
Brady just didn't lose them. Brady did what he was supposed to do. And I think that's what Purdy's done.
Until he became Brady.
Right.
But Brock Purdy is just playing. He's playing the role that he's supposed to play. It's a movie for them. Everybody has a role. And, fortunately for him, unfortunately, but fortunately, he was thrust into the starting role. The film is only as good as your supporting cast. You can have a lead guy or girl that everybody knows, but if everyone around that person isn't up to standards, then how many people is going to go see that movie? Not many people is going to go see. Not many people will go out and recommend that movie to someone else. I think Brock Purdy is in the same situation where, he was thrust into the leading role, but he has probably, other than the Philadelphia Eagles, he has the best supporting cast.
He does.
Around him, which shows on the field, which, it's an A-plus movie now.
Yeah, and he's done a tremendous job of using guys like George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, which, come on, just give them the ball.
Yeah, that's all you got to
do. Their thing. And that kind of furthers my comment of, he hasn't had to put it on his shoulder because it's like, if I could throw, if I could get the ball to George Kittle, I'd look good. It's like George Kittle is one of those just one-of-a-kind guys, same with Christian McCaffrey. And so, I think that's a perfect analogy, a great supporting cast.
Yeah, and but what we haven't seen yet is if they shut down the supporting cast from a run standpoint, whether it's, Mitchell or McCaffrey, if they shut that running game down, can Brock Purdy, be the leading guy and orchestrate and run this offense the way it needs to be ran without any mistakes? We haven't seen him do that in the playoffs consistently. Now, he had to do it a few drives, and he did a good job. But that was against the Dallas Cowboys. I think this Philadelphia Eagles team is much better. I think their defense is better. He's going to have to make a few plays on his own this weekend in order for San Francisco to win this game.
In the AFC, Patrick Mahomes practiced, was a full participant. He talked yesterday. He said the ankle's feeling fine. I don't believe that one second, but – he's a tough guy. That, to me, is obviously a huge concern. But I don't know, Derek, if even though they're the number one seed, I kind of feel like Kansas City flew under the radar a little bit just because they're not the same that they have been, but they're still, obviously really, really good. But I feel like a lot of eyes are on Cincinnati.
Yeah, of course. And it should be. All eyes should be on Cincinnati with what they've been able to do throughout the whole season. They have, arguably the second-best quarterback in the National Football League in Joe Burrow. Not taking anything away from Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. But, this young kid has shown that, he's a tick better than those guys. So they're going to have to deal with that. And then Cincinnati's sort of like They're like the Philadelphia Eagles. They're the Philadelphia Eagles of the AFC.
Yeah.
They're just not as good on defense, I think, as Philadelphia. But when you talk run the football, when you compare their weapons with Philly's weapons on offense, Philly has a better offensive line.
Sure.
But even with all the injuries, Cincinnati's offensive line has been able to hold their own. Because why? He's able to get the ball out quickly. These receivers, they get cushioned. Guys back up. Why? Because they don't want to get beat deep. Now, San Francisco may challenge them. Kansas City may challenge them. Kansas City may say, well, we're going to press you and throw off the rhythm just a little bit and force you to make some throws that you may not be comfortable making, and see how that goes.
Yeah.
But I don't think that'll last long. But there's not too many flaws of the Cincinnati Bengals other than, to me, you know, the secondary, yeah, there's some flaws there.
Apple's not working.
And their offensive line, they have flaws, but they're not showing up.
Yeah.
The way
they're hurt.
But it's not showing up the way it would show up on other teams.
Sure.
You know, even though their offensive line is beat up, they're still able to protect and Joe Burrow.
And I think he protects a lot.
Exactly. He gets the ball away quickly. He knows how to maneuver within the pocket.
Let me ask you this. They have two legitimate number one wide receivers, mm-hmm. franchise wide receivers, mm-hmm. in Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. Tyler Boyd has filled that role. He's a number two, you know, if you put him on most teams. But they got three really good receivers. We all know, you know, that you're competitive. Mm-hmm. And so if you're in a room like that and you're a number one and there's another number one, isn't that dangerous for other teams? Because you're just going to push each other. It's like, hey, I'm going to try and one-up you. Watch this. Like, you just made that catch. Mm-hmm. Watch what I'm about to do. I feel like that's what you get in that receiver room with Cincinnati.
Yeah, and then you also get they have the luxury of, you know, having three guys and a tight end. Who you going to double?
Yeah.
You double Ja'Marr Chase, then T. Higgins is going to kill you. If you double-team T. Higgins, then Ja'Marr Chase is going to take you out. If you double-team the two guys on the outside, Tyler Boyd and the tight end is going to get you. Well, if you try to take the tight ends away, if you try to just play zone defense, well, I'm going to run the ball with Mixon.
Yeah.
And we're going to run it down your throat all day. So, sort of like Philadelphia, this is a hard team to match up with. And Kansas City, they don't have – they have the quarterback. They have the offense. Their defense is good, but they are not a shutdown defense. They wait for you to make mistakes. They figure eventually you will make mistakes. I don't know if Joe Burrow is going to make any mistakes this weekend.
He said yesterday that, you know, even though they won last year in Kansas City, he feels like going into the game this year, they're a much more complete team, and I could not agree with him more. I mean, I think on both sides of the ball, they're more complete.
Yeah, because last year, what was the thing? You know, the offensive line giving up all these sacks. And even though the offensive line
the Titans
still
sacked him nine
exactly,
times.
Even though the offensive line has still given up their share of sacks, they are a much better team. They're more cohesive. They're another year within that system. They all know one another. They trust that the quarterback's going to put them in a perfect position to be successful. The quarterback trusts the offensive line that they're going to protect him long enough so he can get the ball out. He doesn't need 3 or 4 seconds.
No.
He needs 1 or 2 seconds to get the ball to one of those pass catchers.
Yeah, and the Cincinnati should be the model for offensive line wise for the Titans. That it's not perfect, but they made a lot of changes to it this year that you can do it in 1 year. You can make it better in 1 year. You may not fix it all the way, but you can make it better in 1 year, and that's what the Titans are going to have to try and do. Coming up next, a little round ball. We'll talk to Casey Alexander, Belmont basketball head coach, as they had a big win last night. We'll do that next on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Derek Mason with you at Pete Terry's Tavern at Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Devils later on tonight. But last night, the Belmont Bruins got him a win over the Evansville Purple Aces. And we say hello to Belmont men's basketball coach Casey Alexander, who is on the line with us. Coach, how you doing? Good morning.
Hey, I'm great. How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. And your team is obviously been playing well as of late. You've won seven straight and 10 out of your last 11. But what'd you see out of your club last night against Evansville?
We survived. That's about it. They played well. We were missing a couple of guys. Didn't play real clean, but it's nice anytime you can win on the road this time of the year. So we'll take it and we'll move on.
Do you feel like when you use that phrase, didn't play clean, that's some teaching moments that coaches like to have? You can use that in practice.
Yeah, for sure. You know, coaches consistently talk about playing to a standard. Execution is really important to us because we know that if that's the kind of effort you get and your attention to scouting reports and details and doing what you're supposed to do, if all that is on par, then your performance is going to be better. So they usually go hand in hand.
We talked to you last week about, you know, the Missouri Valley Conference and, you know, how difficult of a league it is. You know, you've obviously had to learn your opponents and just how this league works. How do you think you've seen your team improve specifically on the defensive side of the ball as you've gotten into conference play?
Yeah, we've had to learn how to be much more physical and play through, and just play through contact. It's a big boys league, and it took some getting used to, both just from the makeup of rosters throughout the league, style of play throughout the league, officiating in this league. It's really changed kind of our behaviors on the defensive end and even the offensive end. It doesn't come as easily, so we've had to learn to adjust there as well.
We're talking to Casey Alexander, men's basketball coach at Belmont, as they will take on Drake coming up this Sunday. You can watch that on ESPN2. Tell me a little bit more about Ben Shepherd. I know the senior has been a big part of the success that you all have had so far this year.
Yeah, he's been top of the league the last 10 games or so, especially. He's been consistent all year, but I think early on he was probably, I think he would admit, he was trying to do a little bit too much, carry a little bit of the weight of the world on his shoulders. He settled down quite a bit. He lets the game come to him a little bit more now, but his numbers, highly efficient. You look at him across the board, two-point percentage, three-point percentage, leads our team in rebounds. He's got a really good assist-turnover ratio. And that's being a marked man, and that's also being our best defender. So really important to the success of our team, to say the least.
So as you look ahead to Sunday, what do you know about Drake?
Yeah, Drake is a preseason favorite in the Missouri Valley for good reason. They've had four really good years in a row, and they return a lot of guys. I think they're the fifth oldest team in the country. We played them in a Thanksgiving tournament last year down in Orlando in a great, great game. So we've got a little bit of a taste. But they're really, really good. Pretty simple in what they do in a lot of ways, but they epitomize what the Valley is all about. We've already talked about it. They've got great physicality. You know, they're really well coached. It'll be a tough matchup for us, but a fun one. You know, I mean, this is, games like this are a big reason why we made the move to the Missouri Valley. Drake's highly respected and well thought of. It's a national TV game on ESPN2, and so it should be a fun day for us.
Yeah, I remember, you know, in high school, we'd play all these tournaments and, you know, be like, Coach, why we got to do these? But it would prepare you for later on in the season when you got into conference play or you got into, you know, tournament time. Is it kind of the same way with you? You play some of these early season tournaments and it gets you more conditioned for when you get into the meat of your schedule?
Yeah, of course. And for this year especially, we started with such a blank slate. We lose 7 out of our top 8 players from last year. And in this day and age, that means you go out in the transfer portal and you get a brand new roster, but that's not what we did. We have two transfers. Serviceable have been really important to our team, but a lot of freshmen out there are on our roster anyway. So we started at 0 in that non-conference schedule. As always, it really helped us and accelerated things, but it took us a while to really figure out who we are and what our strengths and weaknesses are. And you see some of that coming together now, as evidenced by the winning streak that we're on.
Yeah, and we've talked about that before, the transfer portal. I mean, I feel like that's going to just be a thing that's going to continue to evolve as you go. But I look at a program like Belmont, and I think there's still a place for developing young talent that come in as a freshman, like you were talking about, and then and work their way, you know, through 4 years or what have you. Is that the philosophy that you hope you'll be able to maintain, at least for the most part?
Yeah, for sure. That's our mission. That's been very important to our success through the years. It is definitely more difficult than it ever has been. But Ben Shepherd is a great example of how it can work out. You know, I mean, he had all kinds of people calling him and his people behind the scenes last year. He had a lot of opportunities to go other places, NIL money, you name it. But he stayed at Belmont because we've given him a great experience, and he's really enjoyed his time here. It's a great place, and it's really paid off for him. I mean, I would say he's probably leader in the clubhouse or top handful of guys that are headed for Missouri Valley Player of the Year possibilities.
Well, Casey, best of luck on Sunday against Drake at Curb Event Center. It should be a good one, and we hope to pack the place, but thanks so much for doing this.
Sounds great. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. That is Casey Alexander, head coach of the Belmont Bruins. We've been giving away some tickets to their games, but having a really good season to this point. 16-6 overall, 9-2 in the Missouri Valley, tied for first in their new conference. And you know, Derek, you get so used to the OVC and those opponents, and now, I mean, Murray State went with them, but you got to learn a whole new core when it comes to conference play. But so far, so good for Belmont.
Yeah, it seems to be working out for them. It seems like they transitioned. At this point, it's been a seamless transition, which tells me that this team, you know, if it continues to go the way that I know Coach Hope it does, they could have made this transition years ago, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just you wish them nothing but luck, and they continue their winning streak. And I think they have a better opportunity. When you move conferences or go up in conferences, you have a better shot at, you know, putting yourself in a position because the strength of schedule and everything else at getting an invite to the tournament.
You'll be proud of me. I was flipping through last night. I watched a little bit of Tennessee just whoop up on Georgia. I mean, absolutely whoop up on Georgia, 70-41. And then I went out for a little bit, got back, watched the end of the Grizzlies and Golden State, which that was a fun game.
Yeah,
Golden State ekes it out, but that was a fun game.
It's always a fun game because you got two talented teams. One is much younger than the other, but both teams have, you know, just generational players on their team, whether it be Ja Morant or Seth Curry.
Yeah, Ja Morant, man. That guy is just – he's different. He's built different.
Yeah, he's different, and I do hope – you know, I hope they do find themselves, you know – in the NBA finals, because
I love it.
You know, if they don't, after a while, Ja's gonna have to either, you know, he's gonna have to bring more guys in with him, or, you know, he may have to, and I hope he doesn't, but if you're looking for a championship, you know, you got to do what's best for yourself to try to find that. But they got a young nucleus that I hope they can get that championship.
What team in the West do you think it would be their biggest test? Is it Golden State?
It would be Golden State. I think Golden State would be – they're the number one on my list. Denver's pretty good with the Joker. Let me see, who else?
Sacramento?
Clippers are playing a lot better. They beat the Lakers the other night. I know that. And even the Lakers. I'm not sure about the Suns, man. I think their window is closing slowly. Devin Booker, he's a really, really good player, but he's been hurt some. CP3 is getting older. You know, the big man, it just doesn't seem to work out for them once they get into the playoffs, Phoenix. So, to me, their biggest test right now probably would be Golden State, you know, because Golden State can match them shot for shot.
Sacramento being in there.
Yeah, Sacramento's a pretty good team.
You know, Nick Kieser is a big Sacramento Kings fan.
Yeah, you know what? I actually am. I thoroughly
enjoyed.
And then
you got to worry about the Pelicans as well.
Yeah.
The Pelicans they got a good team too, a young team.
Yeah.
So.
All right, let's give something away on the way out, even though we're not going anywhere. You want to win a pair of tickets to see Nickelback with special guests Brantley Gilbert and Josh Ross at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, August 1st. Tickets go on sale tomorrow at 10, so you can win these things before you can even buy them. Caller number 5 at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. and you can win a pair of tickets to see Nickelback before you can buy them. That is going to do it for Chase and Michelle, but absolutely nothing's going to change coming up next because we will just change the name of the show and it'll be the same people, and that's totally okay. We'll have more coming up next with Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.